I really did. I told this to Ralph Hennessy. I said, I wondered how I got along for so many years without knowing what I now know. So he had no technical training.
Yeah. Jeff knew, you know, in my chats with him, I barely knew him until we went to Korea, but we saw each other, you know, from time to time there. And, you know, one's whole life revolved around that destroyer. That was your life. And keeping the damn thing working was your business. And Jeff knew, if you look at it, he knew nothing about gunnery, not the slightest any idea. You know, he knew guns went bang and he put bullets in them, but we had a very complex fire control system. And if you're the captain, you have to understand that if you're going to be able to use it properly. And you have to know what it will do and what it won't do. And he didn't know that. He knew nothing about torpedoes, not that they were called for, but out there. But they could have been, because at one time there was a threat that the Chinese would actually start using some of their naval forces on the West Coast. His knowledge of communications was, was skimpy. He didn't know about radios and how they worked. He didn't know really anything technical about the ship. Nothing. He knew you could pick up a microphone and say hello. But if you're gonna run a ship, you ought to know what is happening. Now, I don't want to sound like a great expert, but you know, I joined the Navy when I was just over 17, not quite 18, and I spent 3 years learning the very things that he should have been learning. Then after that, I did subs courses, and for another months and so on. Then I became a specialist, and in anti-submarine. And I mean, I knew how to clean boiler tubes in a cruiser because I did it out in the tropics, lying in the boiler, pushing things up. And I spent months in an engine room, you know, running the boilers and tending the turbines and belonging to the torpedo party and in the fire control and all those things. And that's the way the pre-war officers were trained, because they're all in, they ought to know what the hell they're talking about. And Jeff didn't have the benefit of that, so no wonder he was ignorant. He just was. Yeah. And navigational things, he didn't understand that properly. You know, Andy Collier navigated that ship.
Yes. And as you said earlier on in this tape, when you went into a strange harbor, you went down yourself on the PPI, and you told the ship where to go.
Yeah, exactly.
And you had an emergency officer on the bridge in case something was sighted ahead.
Yes, that's right.
He could countermand the last order.
I did it myself. I used to instruct him in the early days of the war. When the radar came out, nobody knew much about it, and it was handed off to the anti-submarine people. There weren't such things as radar officers. Mm-hmm. But anti-submarine people were the only people who were trained in somehow in electronics. It was the only electronic thing, really, apart from some primitive radios. And we took on. I instructed in radar, so I knew about radar and what it wouldn't do, which is more important than what the hell it would do.
Yeah.
You know, and the problems you had with mistaking one thing for another. So, but you know, I'm not unique. All the permanent force officers were trained like that.
Yeah.
And I think it upset some of the reservists when, no matter what we were supposed to do, we were sort of had a vague idea how to do it.
Yeah.
And we were regarded as sort of smart asses, which wasn't the case at all.
No. We've been trained, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think you've made your point.
Yeah, well, I probably overmade my point.
No, I'm glad we have your views on this.
Yeah.
Do you think unification has worked today? What about the common uniform? That was an unnecessary... That exacerbated a very unpleasant situation anyway.
Yes, it did. It just made it bad. I remember some of my naval buddies at the time we were fighting about unification got onto this uniform thing. And I was a rear admiral at headquarters, so presumably what I said should have made some sense. And I said that what we... Our point of view... We shouldn't harp too much about the uniforms, because if you look in the dress and clothing list, you'll find that you have something like 26 uniforms already, and all that's being hammered around here is one more, so now you're up to 27. So if you look at it logically, it doesn't make too much sense. You know, you can't conduct an argument against unification because somebody brings in uniform number 27. I think that view prevailed to some extent. I said it's stupid to go around dressing sailors in green uniform and all the rest of the world puts them in blue.
Yeah.
You know, that was how I argued the case, and it would be embarrassing to ourselves overseas to be running around in some goddamn, laundryman's type uniform when everybody else is wearing traditional blue, like all the merchant marine all over the world and everybody else, and it's just dumb. It's embarrassing to the people who are in it. And that was the point I made, and I think that's the only really good point about it.
Well, there was the loss of identity. The regiments felt it more than as much as the sailors did.
Yeah, of course, it was dumb. But you see, you remember during World War II, the fatigue uniform we wore was actually British Army battle dress.
Yeah.
We wore that at sea, and it was a good practical thing. But
we dyed it blue, didn't we?
Later on, but not for some years.
Right?
No, 1941, too, we wore British battle dress. And that was our own doing. You know,
yeah.
The government didn't say do it, but it was good practical clothing, and the Navy didn't have any, you know. So, anyway, of course, the uniform thing was a great mistake. But, just nonsense. Now it's going to be very difficult to put the sailors back in blue.
Some of them don't want it.
Well, I know it's difficult, but it ought to be done.
Oh yeah,
it ought to be done.
Yeah, it will be done.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't like to be in the committee that decides what it looks like. There'll be as many opinions as there are men in the room.
Well, there's some. We don't have to go out inventing a new uniform. Just go back to the. You know, the British always have stylish uniforms. So do the Americans, and they're very, very similar.
So do the Germans, so do the Dutch.
Yeah, and they're all the same.
I think the jumper should probably go. That was an uncomfortable thing,
yeah.
And the tapes and the lanyard business.
Yeah, I think...
Give them a little bum freezer with brass buttons.
Yeah, I think the sailors' uniform, a lot of them never did like it, and I think that they should have not that traditional so-called uniform. I don't think that makes too much sense.
No.
But it ought to be blue.
So that's all that most of the admirals are saying.
Yeah.
You don't regret your time in the Navy. If you had to do it all over again, how would you lead your life? Go on, answer me differently. Everybody says, oh yeah, I'd do it again.
Yeah, I would do it again. I would do it again.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know. It's quite difficult. I had a few chances when I was in the Navy to change my career. The government, the Liberal Party, the very buggers who went and unified us, really propagandized me for about 2 years to become a politician. They thought I could win in Dauphin, Manitoba, where I came from, in that area. Whether I could or not, I don't know. But I decided against it because MPs were paid less than I was getting as a Commodore, and I was having enough trouble supporting my family then, and they wouldn't make any promises. That I could be more than just a backbench MP. So, but I don't regret that, because I've probably lost anyway. They're all Ukrainians out there like the NDP.
Yeah.
At the end of the war, I met some influential civilians, mainly when I was training people in 97 and that kind of thing. The best offer I had was the Slazenger Sports Company, and I sometimes wonder what would have happened to me if I'd done that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have probably made much more money than I did. But I'm not sorry at all that I hung in the Navy. And I think I left at the right time for me, anyway.
Well, you did. Do you remember the headline a few years before you left, Revolt of the Admirals?
Yeah.
Well, it seemed to me
that was about 6 months before I left.
Yeah.
I was one of the revolting admirals.
Yeah. I said to Mickey Sterling, he was talking about this, I said, you didn't talk to any other admiral, you admirals didn't act in concert, you made up your own decision, and he said, I'm glad you said it. He said, yes, that's true.
It is true.
Why was that?
Well, I don't know. I think we all felt differently about it. For instance, Randy Moore was almost rabid about the whole thing, you know. Ken Dyer, he was the chief of the Navy at the time that I left.
Yeah, because
when I told him I was going to go, tried to persuade me to go to Halifax as the Billy being fired.
Yeah,
and he tried to persuade me to go to Halifax as the flag officer there.
Yeah,
and I could just see that I'd have even less influence on what went on in Ottawa if I went there. So I turned it down and just left. But we really never sat down at a meeting and said, let's revolt.
Oh, no.
Not that at all. And the revolt was the wrong word.
Yeah. They were coincidental resignations,
yeah, everybody
really
left for different reasons. Really.
Well, now, those that stayed on, there was a lot of ill feeling about that time. Do you remember it? I've forgotten who said it to me in the mess. Jack Pickford. He said, one of the things that Hellyer did to us, I'd spoken my mind in the mess. And for those few years, I was about to say something, and I thought, gee, I wonder if I should say that. You know, he divided us. Nelson Lay said, well, he said, of course people stayed. They'd spent their whole life in the Navy just because they were changing the uniform and because politicians were doing silly things. He said, a man had money problems. He had children entering college, and he couldn't afford to quit on a matter of principle, so-called. He said, that's the main reason most people stayed.
I think that's true.
Some stayed to preserve what they could of the good naval ways with this madman Hellyer running things. I'm quoting other people now, although I feel the same way.
Yeah.
So there's a mixture. And then other people said they thought unification was the only thing because integration had turned out to be such a pile of rat shit. Nobody could agree on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Another officer said that. I said to Ralph Hennessy yesterday, I said, you know, a lot of people said about you, Ralph, at the time, Hennessy sold out to Hellyer. He said, yeah, I know they said that. He said, Bill Landy Moore walked right by me one day. And he gave roughly those three reasons for staying. But it was a painful time for us in the Navy.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Ralph couldn't, he didn't feel the way that I felt about it. And I knew, we talked about it. I told him I was going to quit, and he said, Christ, you're crazy, you know. By that time, I was senior to Ralph at that time. I'd been promoted to admiral before he had. We often swapped jobs in the Navy, and we'd gone up together from the day we joined.
Yes.
And I remember not being the slightest bit fed up with Ralph that he was staying.
Because he made a double jump.
Yeah, yes he did.
He jumped over your head.
He went from Commodore to
Vice Admiral.
To Vice Admiral. Well, he didn't jump over my head because I left. I'd gone before that happened.
Yeah.
But that didn't upset me. And we play golf together now. And I never felt bad about him. And he had his reasons for doing it. And I think because there were a lot of people who thought, well, it won't be too bad. Most of the technical officers, for example, all felt it's okay. It was really the operational people who were tiresome, as far as Hellyer was concerned. Like me and Sterling.
Landy Moore and Brock,
and so on. It was just the operational people.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, we won't conclude on bad memories of the divisiveness that occurred then, but we'll conclude on your statement that if you had to do it all over again, you had a good run, Brock.
I did. Yeah, I did. I shot up through the ranks, and I never got very bored with what I was doing at all. But I always worked my head off in the bloody Navy, you know?
I know you did.
Yeah, I really did. I was a pain in the ass to my family.
Yeah.
And, that's what I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure I'd do it again.
Yeah. Before the finale, even. The Army were quitting at the same time.
Yeah. Yes. The Army and the Air Force, many of their senior officers, you know, the Navy got more publicity in this thing called revolting admirals. Nobody called the generals revolting generals, but a lot of the people who had risen to the top in the army, just like ourselves, they also left at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the operational people.
Guy Simmons left, I think.
Well, he'd gone before that.
How do you know?
But Roger Rowley. Bob Monsell.
Monsell is the one I was thinking of.
They're the two outstanding ones that I can think. They were the top people in the army in Ottawa at the time. Jeff Walsh, who was the chief of the army, but he was retiring anyway. He was dead against it. Many senior officers in the Air Force, but for exactly the same reasons. You know, that they just knew that it wouldn't work and didn't want to remain as senior officers, trying to make something work that they didn't believe in and knew it wasn't going to work. And it has not worked. It has not worked.
Yeah.
The capital spending of the armed forces, well, look what happened to them. It just, you know, our armed forces are nothing.
No, it's true.
They're no good. We don't pull our weight internationally. We just don't do our thing. We don't contribute to NATO, which stops us, you know, NATO really and the Americans stop us being grabbed by the Russians when threatened.
I know what you're talking about. I'll tell you the reason Don McClure retired that he told me, and it's not a secret. He was a Rear Admiral. He was a pay bob, Rear Admiral.
Yeah, right.
He was sent to Mobile Command. And the general under whom he was serving told him to go out and inspect a tank corps. And Bob said, oh, you know, I'm a pusser. You know, this is crazy. I can go out and look at tanks. He said, I can't play the part of a soldier. And he left.
Yeah.
That's the reason he left.
He was another one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Don McClure. Mm. Yeah, I see him around town all
sure.
the time. Yeah. Oh, anyway, no, the whole thing was just stupid. It was, the armed forces in all other countries knew it was stupid, and it turned out to be stupid. I mean, no matter how broad-minded and sanguine you are, the armed forces, from the time that happened, have gone downhill steadily. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And until now, we really have nothing. In the last year, they're buying a few bits and pieces, it isn't just the Navy, it's the whole thing.
Well, we'll get this on the record. If you work on this book that you might do, which is not about the past, but about the future, we'll see what you come up with, and I'll help you chapter by chapter if you wish.
Thank you very much.
Now, when you see the transcript of this, I want to leave this out. When you see the transcript of this, your final elevating thoughts will be at the end. This won't be the end.
I see.
You know, I'll just transpose them.
Yeah, okay.
Say hello to Alma.
Alma? Hello. I can't imagine how you're possibly going to type all this twaddle that we've been talking and get it into any sensible form. But I enjoy talking to Hal very much, and it's good that somebody in this country is doing this kind of thing.
Good night, Alma. I'll phone you later.